Hi everyone, thanks for watching. For our latest Artemis Live video interview, I'm delighted to welcome back Luca Albertini, CEO of the specialist insurance-linked investment manager Leadenhall Capital Partners. It's been a while since the last time I interviewed Luca, and there's been a lot going on in the ILS marketplace, of course, and also around the rest of the capital markets. The world is in a state of volatility, it seems almost semi-permanently at the moment. Now we've got one of the most important reinsurance renewals of the year fast approaching, and so is the US hurricane season. And all the while, the catastrophe bond market, which Leadenhall also invests in, is going from strength to strength, it seems. And then the collateralized side of the market is having some interesting times. So it'll be great to get Luca's opinion on all of this, his thoughts on how the market's developing, and I'm really looking forward to hearing your opinions at this time. So thanks for joining me today, Luca.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, given how the ILS market has been evolving through 2022 so far, and I know there's a lot going on and a lot to unpack there, but how has the market been for Leadenhall, and where are you seeing successes?
Leadenhall, we have diversified business strategies with a number of funds and managed accounts. We cover different risk return profiles. We cover non-life insurance linked risk. We cover life and alternative credit. There have been a number of different dynamics affecting each one of the various business sectors we are in. Clearly, we have seen in the past a bit of risk restructuring from some of our investors. Some investors decided to leave the ILS market altogether. Others, they decided to de-risk. But others have understood that there is an opportunity on the high risk end of the return spectrum, and actually made some conscientious investment into that space. So we are seeing not a uniform behavior. We are seeing a consistent interest in the insurance link strategies. I was looking at the amount of ILS capital published by one of the broking houses, and in 2015 we were about $75 billion. Now we're about $100 billion, and if I'm thinking what happened since 2015, that's quite remarkable. It's still in growth, it's still there, it's still stable. It's just how various risk return profiles have been reallocated within the investor appetite. For us, so far so good. We're actually quite excited about the opportunities because clearly, if you have the right amount of capital in each one of the strategies, you can actually bring home some very attractive returns at the moment. And so, we are engaging with the investor and with the markets in order to deliver a portfolio that hopefully can meet investor expectation for 2022.
Great. Yeah, no, it sounds positive. And you're right, it is quite incredible how the markets continue to grow, even though so many people have been talking about the pains that have been suffered. And if we look at somewhere like perhaps cat bonds in isolation, it's been particularly active. But now we're in an interesting situation where spreads are widening quite significantly. And what's your view on this? I mean, there's obviously macro factors involved here as well, but I guess investor appetite is playing a role too. Is this something you expect to last for a while, or do you think this is a short-lived effect?
I hope it lasts for a while because that is an embedded higher return for the investor. But I think the usual dynamics, the carbon market is large within the sector, but a certain amount of outflow and inflow can determine capacity out there. So there have been some external factors that distracted investors in Q1, right? So the new investment into I think across ILS have been delayed because of allocators being distracted by the implication of the Ukrainian situation and the inflation and all the rate rises. So there is a lot to distract investors. But at the same time, let's not forget that the carbon are actually now delivering on what they were built for, which is to provide complementary capacity to their insurance industry when the protection buyers need it most. And we are delivering. You know, I remember making this speech in 2002 when I started, right? And now you do see in the private markets the latest couple of renewals rounds show that there is a need of additional capacity, and so investors have been asked to have been shown more and more opportunities both from the private side and the trader side. And because of the increased opportunity set on the trader side, there is even probably less capital, which is redundant, and therefore the price is expected to maintain momentum. Of course, because of the carbon, they have weekly pricing points. There could be periods where there is no issuance and not much trading, and then there could be some change, maybe just after the renewals, in terms of the pricing direction. But I think overall, the fundamentals are there to maintain a pretty robust return in the carbon sector, because it's totally aligned with what's going on the traditional insurance sector. And when these two markets are aligned, it's actually a good thing. It's a good thing for investors, and is delivering a consistent message to the seeding company.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, because for too long, the two markets have really chased each other in the wrong direction for the investors, and at a time when terms and conditions were also moving in the wrong direction for a lot of people in the marketplace. I think that's what's caused a few challenges over the last 5 years or so.
And you actually mentioned it, clearly, in the pure carbon market, some of the secondary perils didn't make it, because the carbon market, has a more defined way of defining perils and exposures. However, we are seeing now some of the aggregate transaction having tighter terms as well on the carbon. So it's not just pricing, carbons are being structured with a bit of tightening of term and condition as well in some cases, which is very welcome. And for me, is all at the base of sustainability of capital, right? I think we all understand that in order to keep the capital, and we've been able to keep it, as I said, the ILS market is 100 billion, it's remarkable, but we need to address some of the issues, as you say, to the soft market, and make sure that they don't come back.
Yeah, no, I think that's a sentiment that everybody in the space is holding at the moment. So if we move on from
capital sometimes. Except the brokers sometimes. They try. That's their job, right?
Yes, there's always a competing ambition to provide the broadest coverage possible sometimes, which which is not always the best thing for the investor side. And I know that's your job to really look after the investors as much as your seeding clients as well. So, but if we move on from cat bonds, is this reading across into the collateralized reinsurance market? Are you seeing that continuing to firm towards the mid-year renewals?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we saw, it's not just the collateralized, I think the general insurance market is definitely firming up. We have seen in the renewals in April, we're seeing firming up of terms into a major diversifying area like Japan, where we've seen price increases and tighter terms and conditions there, which is, given the purchase power of the Japanese company is not to keep for granted. But also there have been a few U.S. renewals since January, and they all point to clearly, tighter terms, but also unavailability of capacity, particularly some of the riskier ends. So we actually seeing some trend of some seeding company retaining more risk because the price, either for lack of capacity or because the price we would require or the market would require makes it unattractive for them to pay. But clearly on top of all this, which was going on and has been going on also in January 1st, now we also have inflation, which effectively would have an impact if any claim occurs in terms of reconstruction costs. And this morning I woke up and the Bank of England, warned that we could have 10.2% inflation in the UK. Now, I'm not sure what is the projection for the United States. I think it's a bit less than that. but is still in the high single digits. And so all this is being baked in into potential volatility of outcome if you have a landfall in terms of reconstruction. With all the supply chain issues that we had last year, which are not going to be made easier by the events in Ukraine. So we are looking for real risk-adjusted rate movements where not only the premium moves, but also the underlying risk measure is adapted to the new conditions. So in absolute terms, premium need to grow. And clearly, the primary companies have to collect this income by increasing the prices to their policyholders. It's not always easy for them, and this is where sometimes they decide to retain more on the equity side.
Mm. How do you think the last few weeks of negotiations are going to go? Because I know there's sort of mixed messages coming out of different sides of the market in terms of people being able to fill programs, other people really struggling, it seems. Do you think some people are going to be left a bit disappointed this year?
Yeah, well, it is likely because there is a capacity shortage. It's not only, you know, the ILS capital has not grown in terms of capacity. If you look at some cases collateral trapping, that could have caused a bit of a decline in what can be deployed fresh this year. But what you're also seeing as a consequence of the last few years is some large insurance and reinsurance, or insurance operations in particular, de-emphasizing a bit NACA to go towards other lines. And so there is a reduction in capacity. But when you reduce capacity, you tend to look at your book, backtest what happened, and then you, of course, go and favor your best clients, and which are the clients who deliver the best results in terms of losses compared to market share and people who fix their problem. And so, yes, there have been a few programs where everybody wants to keep their share and even grow, and other programs where capacity has been withdrawn.
Mm, yeah, so it sounds like yet another renewal where differentiation is going to be sort of the watchword for a lot of markets. And I wanted to ask you about Florida as well. Obviously, we've been covering the Florida issues quite a lot in the last few months. It's clearly a troubled market. I think the CEO of Renaissance Re said that he felt it was like a theatre that was on fire, so why would you play there? How's Leadenhall feeling about the Florida market this year? Do you plan to be a bit more selective than usual?
Well, we are planning to be more selective in Florida, yes. Again, is the process I just mentioned about reviewing the underwriting performance of individual players. Now, our Florida capacity is a percentage of our AUM, and our AUM changed, right? So, you know, we're probably maintaining a little bit less focus on Florida only programs, and therefore there will be a reduction as a percentage of the AUM. We need to see then AUM, so the amount of money we manage. If we have a couple of big fundraise events, you know, then in absolute terms we may grow. But yes, you know, we're a little bit careful, and again selecting the market players we want to back, because when you are selective, you have the option to choose. And again, I have a feeling we chose those that others like to back as well, right? So there is a bit of a negotiation in there. But let's not forget also that Florida went through some transformation, and they're trying to address the issues they actually are paying with their pockets, you know, some of the mistakes, you know, in terms of additional premium which is charged to them. I'm not one of those saying write off Florida altogether, but actually, you know, the state needs additional capacity. That's what, peak perils is what we started doing as an ILS industry. We just need to make sure that the right insurance companies get the capacity, and that, lower quality players effectively are left for my competitors.
No, absolutely, and get the right price as well. What about the legislative side? Do you think anything that's been proposed so far is going to make a significant difference there, or do you think they need to get their sort of teeth into some much more meaningful reform of litigation and fraud and things in the marketplace?
Yeah, I expect it to be a longer process. And by the way, I'm not even clear that there's a definite proposal
No.
on all that we need, and therefore, and also there is a potential for there is an election coming up, right? And so there is a potential for changes within the state. But they started addressing this, and it is already good. Is something that if they didn't do, it would have been quite detrimental to their ability to buy reinsurance in the long term, and it's something they need to keep on doing. We are definitely, the fact that at the government level there is a understanding that something has to be done is very positive, but the devil that is always in the details.
Yeah. No, acknowledging the problem is always the first step, but actually getting something done is often a much longer task when it comes to politics, unfortunately. So finally, I thought I'd ask you about Leadenhall last year backed a rated reinsurance platform. It's the A-rated vehicle, Nectaris Re. And I thought I'd ask you how that's going and how are you realizing the benefits of using that structure within your underwriting operations as well? It seems rated platforms have become increasingly important, and I assume so to you as well.
Yeah, no, we worked, and that's why we established it. And I must say, we're very, very pleased with the market reception of the vehicle. We used to write all the rated paper that was offered for our insurance link investment was actually written through MS Amling, which is a group company. However, there are some transaction costs and there is also a different level of risk retention when you use a true rated reinsurer than a ILS rated reinsurer. So we have been able to write 10% of our business straight into Nectaris. That actually saved us over $2 million of fronting fees. So there is a very tangible benefit. We did not expect that to be that big year one. We thought we needed a longer marketing period. Now perhaps the market condition have helped us to make the case for Nectaris faster than we anticipated. But we have already decided, we're already working to a business plan to double the amount of open market business written through Nectaris. But also, in terms of facilitation, is a much smoother operation. Really allows us to manage the risk in a very efficient way, and all the payments flow. So we're very, very pleased with the project and with the actual outcome.
No, that's great to hear. It seems to be becoming such an important thing to own as much of your sort of marketplace interface and plumbing as you can, and glad to hear it's going well for you. Thank you very much, Luca. Really nice to see you and good to talk to you. And I must say, congratulations on your recent award. That was a
Thank
pleasure
you.
to hear that you'd won that one. I'm very pleased for you. So thank you for your time and good to talk to you.
Thank you, Steve. Good to talk to you.